This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Joy 94.9 wishes to advise the following program, Hide and Seek, is a show intended for an adult audience. Generally, our discussions are of a sexual nature and may contain coarse language and references to drugs.
Hide and seek.
Sit back and enjoy the ride. And enjoy the ride. And enjoy the ride. And enjoy the ride. And enjoy the enjoy. And enjoy the enjoy. And enjoy the enjoy.
Hide and
seek. And enjoy the ride.
You're listening to Joy 94.9 with Dean Beck and James Finlay. Now, the piercing urge was established in 1991 to meet the small but growing need for safe installation of body jewellery in Melbourne. The gay and lesbian community, along with those living as part of the alternative cultural scene at the time, generated much of this initial need. Now, the aim was to provide an environment where people could go to find out more about this emerging trend and to explore their own desires in the world of body piercing. The woman behind the piercing urge, Louise Hickman, joins us in the studio now. Louise, welcome to Hide and Seek and welcome to Joy.
Thank you.
There is various, I guess, expressions of body art. There's tattooing, there's piercing, but piercing can go from simply getting your ears done to current trends, which is, lips and tongues and upper ears and eyebrows and nipples and navels and penises and all sorts of things.
Oh my, when did that happen?
Well, I'm just told. Apparently this is going on in this country.
Oh my.
It's revolting. You were very instrumental in helping the Department of Human Services reformat the guidelines for body piercing. Tell us a little bit about why they needed to be upgraded. Where were we and where are we now?
Where were we? It was tragic, actually, where we were. And I think one of the main reasons for that was because the Department of Human Services were, for many, many years, largely focused on the food industry here in Melbourne. And so we were operating off guidelines that were originally written in 1991. And it was this tiny little A5 booklet, not much different to the Melbourne Leather Pride Guide this year.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It was a very similar size to that.
I remember it. I remember
and the little pink thing. Pink cover.
It's when HIV first hit
exactly.
town and exactly. all of a sudden anything to do with blood had to be handled a guideline produced. So they whipped together this funny little pink book. And then 15 years later, they decided that, perhaps that little pink book wasn't quite enough. Yes.
Yes, and of course, during that time, since we had those guidelines, the growth in the body art industry, skin penetration industry, beauty industries, there were so many industries that had expanded rapidly in that 15-year time frame, and they were all going off this little pink book, and it was a bit tragic and a bit dangerous too.
It just went a bit crazy.
It did. The whole industry blew out in that time, and it was all just going along of its own accord, really, and doing what it wanted. So,
how much of it is determined by fashion trends, and how much of it is, a cultural trend?
I think overall in Australia we are culturally tending toward heavier piercing acceptance, but we do tend to follow the superstars and the singers and the actors. And I remember a time, it'd have to be 15 years ago, at the Piercing Urge, we were seeing an enormous number of people coming in to get the upper cartilage of their ear pierced. Just the little ring.
That sort of top edge.
The normal stock standard thing. But it was well and truly out of the norm as far as numbers were concerned.
Because every person that walked through the door wanted
it. Exactly. It was like, hang on. 1 minute we're going from what's the language restriction here?
No, there is none. Oh, there is none. As long as you don't defame anybody, you can say what you're fucking my like.
One minute we're going from cunts and cocks, you know, everywhere, and then the next minute it's ears. And I'm like, what's happening? And I started asking people, and it turned out that someone on Neighbours had their upper ear cartilage done on Neighbours.
Wow.
And so everyone was, you know, yeah,
I found this
copying.
This little article from the New York Times, dated 21st of November 1993, titled Runways, Fetish or Fashion? It's easy to pinpoint the moment when body piercing went mainstream. Christy Turlington came down a London fashion show, her midriff bared between two slices of creamy knit, and there, in the middle of her navel, was a ring.
Oh my word.
The next day, Naomi Campbell was tugging at the waistband of her Vivian Westwood micro mini kilt to show the world that anything Christy could do, she could do. And she too had one.
And so was born the navel piercing.
Indeed. So I guess in that instance, fashion is dictating what happens.
Certainly. Yeah.
But there is a cultural shift as well. Getting things like your tongue pierced or a PA, is a Prince Albert, is not fashion.
No. But what fashion did do, though, was really give us that timeline from when piercing went from function to aesthetic. Yeah.
Function meaning?
Well, it feels good. It looks, you know, for you or them or whoever. And not just looks good.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So navel piercing, I mean, I don't know of any kinks that actually represent the sexual use of navel piercings. It's more about what they look like aesthetically, whereas genital piercings, nipple piercings, even tongue piercings to a degree do have a sexual purpose.
Now, so. I actually read somewhere that the tongue piercing was one of the most erotic of piercings.
Apparently.
Okay. You know, it must depend on how you use it, because I have someone sucked on my cock with the tongue piercing and I haven't noticed until they actually told me later.
You mean they're not using the technique that they could be using?
Yeah, I think that's the whole point. Yeah.
Right.
But that also brings up the next point too, which is I often tell people if they come into me, I do a lot of consulting for genital work.
Yeah.
If they come into me and they can't actually get off without the piercing.
Oh, that's a bit of a problem.
Chances are the piercing's not going to cut it for them either.
That's interesting, because I have quite protruding nipples that are naturally like that. They're a piercer's dream.
Lovely.
But
what are you doing after this?
Was that an offer?
Well.
But they have no connection to my penis.
Really?
Absolutely no zing. And yet I know people can only zang with their zing and the nipples. Yeah,
no, mine have no connection either. It's really weird. And sometimes embarrassing. Oh, okay, well, there we go. Seems like everyone is just like us.
No, but I do know people that have had it done, and that then it creates the zing, yeah?
Yeah, it does, because whenever we pierce the nipples, there is a really good chance that the nipple's going to become a lot more sensitive. So, you know, and so that for those who are really into the zing with their nipples, I usually recommend do one at a time, because so if the zing doesn't zang anymore, you know, like at least you've got the other one to play with. Mm.
I have heard of stories, though, that people that had sensitive nipples then got them pierced and lost their zing.
Wow. Yeah. See, that's, I don't know about that one. No zing losing here.
But it's kind of important that people actually get this done, like, kind of professionally, isn't it?
Oh, kind of.
Because I went on a holiday with my mum and my little brother and left Dad at home. And seems like poor Dad, he had to work. But it seems like he must have gone through some kind of, like, midlife crisis, because we get back and he's pierced his nipple.
Mine.
Whoa, Dad.
Go, Dad.
That's it, yeah.
Go, Dad.
So, you know, apparently all it was a few few drinks and a couple of ice blocks, and next thing you know, he's...
Oh, wow, did he do it himself?
He did it himself.
Brave Daddy.
Now, Louise, can you take us through some of the things that you as an institution, as a business, would go through rather than a couple of icebox and a pin or whatever? Because I don't think that's the best way to go about it.
No. I mean, I can tell you, Dean, that things have certainly come a long way in the time that Piercing Urge has been around, which is, you know, drawing nigh to 20 years now. These days, the procedures are so refined, I would say, that they're straightforward, very fast,
accurate.
Very clean, accurate. Absolutely, when I think about what was many moons ago.
Because I've heard of some horror stories.
Yeah.
Guns misfiring and all
guns,
sorts of things.
Don't even get me started on guns. The guns are bad. I've seen some dreadful things with guns.
Yeah.
Guns at the very, very maximum.
We're talking about piercing guns.
For an earlobe, yeah, exactly. They should never be used on our most prized possessions.
In fact, I don't think they're even advised for earlobes anymore.
No.
They use a push system, don't they?
Yeah. Because they can't be sterilised, you know, and in this day and age with the concerns we have, it's not okay.
Sure.
It's not okay that the same gun that, you know, is used on, say, look in my world, you know, down in Commercial Road, Paran, on, let's say, the HIV-positive person can then be used on the year-old baby that is taken into the same chemist straight after.
Now,
not okay.
They did come up with a sort of cartridge system.
Oh, they did, but you know,
you've still got the gun.
Okay. You know, there's a case in the States years ago where I think it was 300 cases of HEP were traced back to the one gun, and that's where they got banned.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So, I don't like them at all. I'd much prefer the clean route myself. You know?
Well, I prefer a clean route too.
Yeah, me too. I mean, definitely the way to go.
But you must see some horror stories come in from some backyard home jobs and things.
We do. Unfortunately, a lot of people find the piercing urge once they have a problem. Yeah, and that's sad for us because, you know, we don't like people seeing people involuntarily in pain. And, we do the best we can do. Sometimes we can help and sometimes it's off to the doctor. Or
let's talk about, I guess, the fetish side of it, the pain side of it. There is an attraction to it.
Absolutely.
I don't quite get it, but can you explain it for me?
Oh, see, the fetish kink side of it is so my gamut. But
great, that's fantastic. That's what we'd love you to share. Your thing is piercing. So what's that about?
Well, there's either the act of doing the piercing that someone really enjoys, receiving the piercing that someone really enjoys. But for most people, in my experience, it's not so much the act of receiving the piercing, but more what you can then do with the piercing after it's done and after it's healed. And particularly sexually, that plays into the BDSM leather kink scene quite extensively.
I've seen images of needles creating like a fish spine along a vertebrae, I guess is the word.
Yeah, I've seen that.
And that sort of thing. And I've seen people suspended on hooks and that's all in the piercing realm, am I right?
It is, certainly. Yeah, the Hanged Man team, which is the Melbourne suspension team, are largely body piercers,
One of my mates is part of that and he's shown me some photos. They're actually hanging, like, with... They've got like hooks in their back.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's it.
Now, is that about weight distribution and dispersion? And
yes.
But you wouldn't want to tear it, would you?
No, you wouldn't. You wouldn't. But you know, again, it's like we've never dropped anybody.
Okay, that was where my mind was going.
We've never dropped anybody. But the suspension is very similar to piercing in that, you know, you don't do these things but from a backyarder, you know, because being dropped from hooks would not be my idea of fun.
No, it doesn't sound
flying
like my
from
idea
hooks,
of fun
on the other
either.
Hand, is a totally different story.
We're talking to Louise Hickman from The Piercing Urge. Nearly 20 years in business, and we're talking about the ins and outs of piercing, I guess. We're going to take a little break, Louise, but we'll be back in just a minute. You're listening to Hide and Seek on Joy 94.9.
And enjoy the ride.
You're on Hide and Seek with Dean Beck and James Finlay. And joining us in the studio is Louise Hickman from The Piercing Urge. Now, Louise, I've always wanted to get both nipples done and, you know, I'd like to get a PA too, actually, but I'm just far too gutless. And I found this little article about a guy who sort of wrote a blog about his getting his nipples done, and then he went on to get a PA And he said that the nipples were by far the bigger nightmare. The second nipple was even the worst nightmare. But he said the PA was a breeze because it was all underneath the tides and vomit.
So this is the one.
Say that again with a tongue piercing.
Just to clarify, this one goes like through like the hole, doesn't it?
And it does. It's actually a great piercing because you're only getting one hole because the other one's built in.
Yes, perfect. Indeed.
Exactly. Yes. Simple.
Half the work's already
Half
done.
The work's done.
Easy. But that's true, Dean. A lot of people who have had a range of piercings done, including genital and nipple, will often put nipples at the top of the list for what hurts.
The second nipple.
And secondly, the second one, because your body knows what's going on. The first one, you're ignorant, you know. The second one, you're all primed.
Oh. Someone said to me, if you're going to get both nipples done, do it in the same day.
Yes,
because you'll never go back.
Definitely, I would totally agree with that. And the other thing I just like to say too, though, is that it's really fast.
Yeah,
you know, you forget the pain really quickly once you've got the results. So
PAs, Prince Albert's, the one that is the single ring through the thing,
urethra.
Yes. Now there's a little line in the gland.
Yes.
Now you gotta miss that, don't you?
You do. It's called the frenum.
Right.
And you actually. You know, I'd give you a gold star if you could even pierce it. It's got to go either side.
Right. Yeah. Okay. Is it true that it was the husband of Queen Victoria that had one?
Look, that's certainly one of the, you know.
Because she was a bit of a root rat,
apparently. Well, see, apparently it was that she didn't actually want to touch his crown jewels.
What?
And so she put the ring in so that she could, you know, lift it via the ring. And not have to dirty her hands with
Is
his
that the story?
Flesh. Yeah.
How times have changed.
And, you know, there's so many stories about the PA.
There are some dangers with genital piercing and oral sex, though. Chipped teeth. I mean, I did actually get a little bit of a gritty chip of my own once.
Wow.
I am.
Someone
I'm
went
impressed.
A bit crazy.
I'm impressed, yeah.
Is this from the Prince
Sounds like
Albert?
A good night.
From somebody else's PA, yeah.
Yeah, wow.
It was quite a large PA.
Nice,
but anyway, that's irrelevant.
Dean.
I did, yeah, take a bit of tooth off. Anyway, enough about that. What is the most popular piercing that you get in your studio?
Look, that does vary. That varies according to the year and what's going on at the time. I mean, I specialise in genital and nipple work, so that's what I see a lot of. But other things, more the aesthetic piercings, do go through phases. At the moment, we are doing a large amount of what's called dermal anchors, which are single-point piercings, and they're a relatively new addition to the body modification industry, and surface piercings as well.
What is the where they put things under the skin?
Beading.
Oh, beading. Yeah, beading. And they create... Yeah.
Subdermal implants.
Yeah.
And yeah. Yeah, that's certainly getting to become quite popular.
And some people who get their eyebrows pierced just can't seem to hold them for long at all, whilst others can seem to hold them forever. What's that about?
That's about a process called rejection. Mm-hmm. When we put something into the body that we're not born with, you know, it's not meant to be there, so we need to fool it into thinking that that it's okay. Rejection's a great process when it concerns getting a splinter in your finger that you don't want there.
And
yes, we want our immune system to get rid of it.
Sure.
When it comes to a body piercing, that's not what we want. So we need to use metals that are really high grade, so that an implant grade, so that the body doesn't recognise them as being foreign. As we've seen the industry grow so much over the last 10 years or so, we've also seen the growth of really, really bad body jewellery. And so we've seen an increase in rejection, all that kind of thing, because people just shove a $5 piece of jewellery in there and expect that it's going to work the same.
Wow.
You know, and it just doesn't.
I've been into your studio and noticed that the jewellery, I guess, is, at first glance, quite expensive. But I have seen what looks to be the same thing in shops everywhere for like $2-3 and things. Tell me what the difference is we're talking
about. The difference is in the grade of the material.
Right.
But more the pricing difference, all of our jewellery comes in from the US, whereas most of the jewellery that you're seeing comes in from Asia now. And the polish on the jewellery, if you pay attention to it, it doesn't look grey. All right, it's actually quite a high shine on that jewellery.
Yes,
the
yes.
only way
sort
to
of
get
chrome
it.
Chrome almost.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
The only way to get that involves a human sitting at a polishing wheel. And as soon as you put a human into any manufacturing process, the price is going to go up.
Right. There's some finer details about jewellery as well, like the thread.
Yes. Yes.
Tell us about that.
There is internal threading where the ball has a little post on it that screws inside the bar, which leaves the bar itself completely smooth, which is the bit that's running through your piercing. Now, I don't know about you, but if I'm going to put something through my nipple, I'd prefer it to be smooth.
Sure.
Yeah. It's just logic to me, but yeah, you know, apparently a lot of people don't understand that. And then there's the other version, which is external threads, much cheaper to manufacture. Balls fall off very readily, and you are dragging a jagged edge through your fresh piercing, which is, you know.
Nothing worse than your balls dropping off, really.
Yeah, well, that's right.
What is the piercing that goes perpendicular to the head of the penis?
Straight through it, from
straight
side to
through,
side?
Straight through, yeah. Does that go through the hole, through, or does it go above it?
The hole, come on.
Urethra? Is that
urethra? What your bits are called?
Does it go through the gland, or does it go through the urethra?
It goes through just above the urethra, and it's called the Ampelang piercing.
I suppose if it went straight through the urethra, wouldn't we add spurting everywhere?
Sprinkler, yeah.
We turn into
a bit of a sprinkler. Yeah, exactly.
Good point.
It used to go through the urethra, but not anymore. No, right. Seriously.
Research and development proved that was probably
R&D.
A bad idea.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Somebody had to put up with the sprinkler.
Yeah.
Now, a guiche, what's that?
The guiche is located just behind the balls, about halfway between the balls and the anus.
Just about to bring that up.
Through that really nice bit of sensitive perineum.
The perineum, right.
The perineum.
Ah, yeah. You got a dangler.
So, like,
apparently when you pull on that, when you come, it feels really good.
On the piercing?
I've got to take people's word for that, of course.
So what, pull on the piercing that's there?
Yeah.
Wow.
Just before orgasm. It's supposed to be really nice.
Louise Hickman, you're doing some workshops for Melbourne Leather Pride.
I am doing a workshop for Melbourne Leather Pride. Yes.
What's that encompassing?
Well, it's called Piercing for Bondage and Sensation. And what I'm going to cover in that is how to make best use of piercings for bondage and sensation. Because there's nothing worse than, you know, getting a great piercing done and, getting into trouble with it while you're playing with it. Because, of course, that's what we love to do, is play with these things. But if they're too thin, then they can tear and rip. Yeah. And you want to hang from the chandeliers, you've got to be prepared for such things.
And I guess you can take people through the healing process and operational process.
Absolutely. The other thing I'm going to teach in that workshop is how to actually add play piercing to your scene space as well, which is just the use of thinner gauge needles for temporary piercing, like the actual sensation of the piercing as opposed to having a piece of jewellery in it.
Now, we must stress that piercing does involve blood, and as such, it is very wise to get the advice from a learned person that has mastered the art, like Louise.
Thank you.
Louise, your seminar for Melbourne Leather Pride, Piercing for Bondage and Sensation, is on 7 p.m. on Thursday, the 17th of September. If you would like to enrol in that workshop, you can do so by emailing events@leatherpridemelbourne.com. And if you check the Hide and Seek blog through the week, we will have a link to that.
Now, we've also just had an email in from Paul, who's mentioned about, I don't know if you've seen it before, but pretty sure I have, but a guy that's had his tongue sliced, you know, 2 or 3 centimetres down. What is it called, and is there much of it around?
It is called tongue splitting. There's not a lot of it around. I know a few people in Melbourne who have had it done.
Oh.
They've had it done by usually by travelling artists, people who don't necessarily have a fixed place or address.
Fixed address.
That's exactly right. You know, the tongue splitting is a hard thing to get done because by default the tongue is a really rapidly healing piece of tissue that we have because it's essential for our survival. You know, we need to be able to eat.
Yeah, and it's the strongest muscle too, isn't it?
So tongue splitting is certainly a dedicated process to have it stay split because its natural default thing is to heal back together again if you cut it. So, yes, but no, it's happening for sure.
Louise, it's been fascinating to talk to you and to get some of the insights of the motivations behind piercing, really.
Sure. Thanks for inviting me, Dan.
Thank you for joining us on Hide and Seek on Joy. Louise Hickman from The Piercing Urge, and you can catch her workshop as part of Melbourne Leather Pride. You're listening to Hide and Seek on Joy 94.9.
And enjoy the ride.
James and I have the top 10 signs your body piercing fetish has gone too far.
Number 10, with this nipple ring, I thee wed.
Number 9. Before your appendix operation, you asked the doctor to put the stud through your spleen.
No matter how you go to sleep, you wake up pointing magnetic north.
Number 7. When the wind picks up, you sound like the Boston Pops woodwind section.
Though it looks cool, the diamond stud in your cornea seriously impairs your ability to drive at night.
Number 5. It hurts like hell when you absent-mindedly sit on the microwave.
Yeah, that'd give you a bit of a fright. Number 4, every time you sneeze, it sounds like someone dropped a box of salad forks.
Number 3, you can't walk through an average doorway because the javelin in your tongue gets stuck.
That sounds disgusting. Number 2, despite your Kate Moss frame, you're still 37 pounds overweight.
And number 1 reason that your body-piercing fetish has gone too far... Getting through the airport metal detector now requires stripping down to your skeleton.
Hide and seek.
Sponsored by Manhouse. Manhouse.com.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.